Chapter 15. News of the criminal complaint charging first-degree murder against Ermeline Ransom spread like wildfire through the courthouse that morning. Immediately upon hearing the news, Hickman County Clerk Herman McKenna wasn't buying it. Something just didn't add up about the arrest of Ermeline Ransom for the shooting death of Victor Harrow. As county clerk, it was McKenna's job to take care of the official county records of Hickman County. This included real estate records and property records. Real estate records in Illinois were known as grantor-grantee indices, meaning that you could search by the last name of the person who made a deed of real estate, grantor, to someone else, grantee, or you could search by the last name of the person, grantee, who received a deed of real estate from someone else, grantor. The records also included what are known as UCC-1 financing statements. Whenever tangible personal property such as furniture, machines, cars, trucks, construction equipment, anything that wasn't attached to real estate was purchased with a lien, then the seller filed a UCC-1 financing statement. The purpose of the UCC-1 was to give a subsequent purchaser of the property official notice that there was already a lien on the property and that if he or she purchased it, they would be taking title subject to the lien of the original seller, at least until the original lien was paid in full by the first purchaser. When that happened, the lien was marked as paid, and a subsequent purchaser then took 100% title to the asset upon payment of the second selling price. It was a complicated office that Clerk McKenna oversaw, but he thought it the most important office in the Hickman County Courthouse because of the assets involved. After all, the assets registered in his office proved that people owned things. The records proved their wealth. And wealth in Hickman County, as in most counties in America, meant everything. So when Clerk McKenna's assistant clerk, Clarice Jones, came to him and told him that Attorney Fletcher T. Franey was spending the second of two full days in the clerk's office looking through the records for assets owned by Victor Harrow, McKenna's antenna had gone on alert. First, it was rare that the attorneys themselves pored over the records McKenna kept. Most often the records were viewed by clerical people from the banks and S&Ls. When the attorneys needed a record, they 99% of the time sent a secretary over to make a copy. But it wasn't until Vic Harrow had been murdered did the recollection of Franey's visits to the county clerk's office really come into focus for McKenna. Now, it had him wondering. Clerk McKenna's own daughter, Angel McKenna, had grown up best friends with Ermeline Ransom, née Armentrout. They had played paper dolls and dress-up together, had raised hamsters and turtles together, had performed in ballet and piano recitals together, had served on the high school spirit squad together, and had married, to everyone's wonder, two second cousins upon graduation from high school. That Ermeline was now charged with first-degree murder just didn't click for McKenna. That Franey had personally spent 2 days in McKenna's office with Vic Harrow's records did raise a red flag for McKenna, as those visits were only a day or two before Vic Harrow's death. Something was skewed, and McKenna planned to get to the bottom of it. So, he made a call to the feds in Chicago.
"It's probably nothing," he told Special Agent Pauline Pepper of the Chicago office of the FBI. "It's probably just coincidence, but it's something I think the feds need to look into."
Special Agent Pauline Pepper wasn't so sure.
"It could just as well have been coincidence," she told McKenna. "Lawyers visit clerks' offices every day and review records. That doesn't mean there's been a crime committed. You would be doing me a favor just to nose around down here some afternoon," McKenna said. "Let's say I'm requesting that as an official act."
Special Agent Pepper paused. A hunch or a feeling was one thing. An official request from a county official was something entirely different. She would now have to make a record of the call and at least do some cursory footwork.
"How about this?" she said. "How about my partner and I come and check it out with Mr. Franey? No big deal, just some standard questions, that sort of thing."
McKenna smiled.
"That would be a great idea. Like you say, it's probably nothing. On the other hand, it could be something. I know Ermeline Ransom, and I don't believe for a second she murdered Vic Harrow. It's just not in her to do that. I don't care what he did to her."
"He carved her up pretty bad, then."
"Horrible! I hear he cut up her entire chest area."
"Damnation," said Agent Pepper.
"Okay, we'll do our due diligence, and I'll file a report. I'll copy you on the report, even though I'm not supposed to. But seeing as how you're a county official and all, I see no harm."
stop by when you're done. I'm buying the coffee.
Will do.
After the second voicemail message, the one from D.A. Irwin, Thaddeus slipped his suit jacket back on, pulled on his London fog, and crossed Madison Street in a snowstorm to the Hickman County Jail. Sheriff Altman was up front, reviewing the booking record when Thaddeus came clomping inside, kicking the snow onto the rubber mat. The doorbell chimed beside him, as there wasn't always a receptionist up front, especially at night when the staffing was cut down due to budgetary constraints. The sheriff looked up from the booking clipboard. He was dressed in his standard outfit, gray slacks, blue button-down, brown tie, a badge, and his gun on his belt. When he would go out, in this weather, he would add the standard nylon cop's jacket with the fur collar.
Thaddeus,
he said.
It couldn't get much worse for her.
I know. I better break the news, Charlie.
Let's go back. She's already had breakfast. Cece brought it over.
Chris is coming with an outfit for court. She's going by Ermeline's house. As of right now, she still doesn't know anything, right?
None of us have said a word. That's your job.
Thanks.
Charlie led Thaddeus back to the door at the end of the first bank of cells. He slipped a key in the door and they entered the women's holding area. When Ermeline saw Thaddeus, she closed the Gideons she was reading and turned away.
This isn't going to be good, is it?
She said.
Oh, damn.
Charlie left them alone. Thaddeus entered the cell and took a seat on the second bunk across from Ermeline's.
No, it's not good.
He went over the two phone calls in detail, describing the criminal complaint that would be filed. He then explained the dependency petition that would be filed concerning Jamie's temporary custody. Ermeline's eyes filled and tears streamed down her face. She jumped up and down on the cement floor and hit the cement wall with her fist. Then she threw herself down on her mattress. She was pale, and he could tell there had been little, if any, sleep. Her eyes were bloodshot, and her fingers tightly clutched the Gideons as if it was all she had to support her. He started in again. When he was done, she became very quiet and non-communicative. It suddenly occurred to him that he would have to request a suicide watch on Ermeline. She was too quiet.
Well,
he asked her.
Are you ready to get to work with me?
I suppose,
she said dreamily.
I'm going to lose, aren't I?
As long as there are no fingerprints on the gun or the knife, we're home free. I can walk you out in front of a jury on those facts. You're sure you didn't handle either one?
Positive. My mom won't allow a gun within a football field of the house. Not after what happened to my dad.
They launched into a long discussion about Jamie's temporary placement. It turned out that Ermeline had an aunt in Louisiana, Missouri, who would almost certainly take on the responsibility. Thaddeus called the aunt on his cell. There was no answer, so he left a message. The clock was creeping around to 9:30, which was when Nancy Kelly, Quentin Irwin Jr.'s secretary, knocked once and entered the women's area. She shoved a handful of papers through the bars.
"This is from Quentin,"
she said, avoiding Ermeline's eyes.
"He says he's sorry, but he has to do it."
She immediately turned and left. Thaddeus slowly studied the paperwork.
"This is your standard dependency petition, signed by Naomi Killen of DCFS and set for hearing 1/2 hour from now before the Honorable Nathan R. Prelate, Circuit Court Judge. They're going to try to make Jamie a ward of the state while you're locked up. It says here your mom doesn't qualify for temporary custody. Let me call Christine."
Ermeline sobbed once and cried.
"Help me, Thaddeus."
Thaddeus called Christine Sussman. He asked her to meet him in court just before 10 o'clock. He had an idea that just might work. He stood up and drew a deep breath, tossing his shoulders back. A chill ran down his spine as he realized that he was all that was standing between Ermeline Ransom and the ruination of her life. His law practice was suddenly becoming very real and loomed very large before him. He was certain most new lawyers in just their second year never found themselves facing anything quite this serious.
"It just ain't gonna happen," he said. "We'll figure out something, but you're not losing Jamie, not if I can stop it."
Thaddeus was waiting in the courthouse hallway when Christine came up the stairs two at a time.
"We've got a problem," he told her. "Naomi Killen is trying to make Jamie a ward of the court and place him in a foster home while Ermeline's locked up."
Christine winced.
"What can we do?"
They discussed the possibilities, and finally Thaddeus had to go inside the courtroom. He told Christine to stay put. He would send the bailiff when he was ready for her.
Judge Nathan R. Prelate was in a good mood. It was the day after Christmas. Every gift he had bought for the wife and two girls fit, so returns wouldn't be necessary. All three had seemed pleased with his selections. The girls had made it home by 1 a.m., almost every night since Christmas break, and there had been few strange sleepovers going on inside their bedrooms. Finally, he was beginning to hope, Leona may have outgrown that open and notorious sexual stage she had been going through since her sophomore year in high school. This past week there had been no bed-sharing with members of the opposite sex, or even with members of the same sex. Winnell was a different story, and probably always would be. So when he took his seat in the courtroom on the morning of December 26, he was in a good mood and ready to see justice done. He told those in attendance to be seated, which included Ermeline Ransom, who had been brought from jail to the court by Deputy Dale Harshman. Ermeline was wearing dark slacks and a herringbone sport coat, white shirt buttoned to the throat. Deputy Harshman had removed the handcuffs and had placed Ermeline so she was sitting at counsel table on the left side of the courtroom, Deputy Harshman sitting just behind her in the first spectator row. Judge Prelate looked out over his domain. First up was the petition entitled, In R.E. Jamie Ransom, a Juvenile. He had the clerk call the case and watched as Quentin Irwin Jr. and Thaddeus Murphy took their seats at counsel table. Quentin had the burden of proof, so he sat at the table closest to the jury box, although, of course, there was never a jury in juvenile dependency cases. At Quentin's right, Naomi Killen took a seat. She was there representing the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, and it was her signature that appeared on the dependency petition itself. At the table on the judge's right sat Thaddeus Murphy, who took a chair beside Ermeline. She had been sitting alone and looked nervous and very frightened, Judge Prelate noted. He couldn't blame her.
"Gentlemen," he said to the two attorneys, "are we ready to proceed?"
"Yes, Your Honor," said Quentin Irwin Jr. and Thaddeus Murphy, almost in unison.
"Very well, if the clerk will call the case."
Clerk of the court, Wilma Smith, scrolled to the top of her computer screen and called the case of In R.E. Jamie Ransom, a juvenile. Quentin announced that he was present and representing the state of Illinois. Thaddeus announced that he was present and representing Ermeline Ransom, the mother of the juvenile. At that moment, the courtroom door behind them banged open and Attorney D.B. Leiniger strode noisily up to the bar and entered through the swinging gate.
"Mr. Leiniger," said the judge, "we've just called the juvenile case the clerk called you about this morning. Are you able to serve as guardian ad litem for the minor?"
The 89-year-old attorney pulled out the chair next to Ermeline.
"I am, Your Honor. As an officer of the court, I take the responsibility very seriously and will do my best to properly represent the child's interests."
"Good enough," said the judge.
"Counsel," indicating Quentin Irwin Jr.,
"it's your petition. Please call your first witness."
"The state calls Naomi Killen."
Naomi Killen stood before the clerk of the court and raised her right hand. She took her oath and climbed the step up to the witness chair.
"State your name for the record."
"Naomi Killen."
"And Miss Killen, what is your business, occupation, or profession?"
"I am the lead caseworker for the Department of Children and Family Services of the state of Illinois for Hickman County, Illinois."
"And in that capacity, have you come into information concerning the minor named Jamie Ransom?"
"I have."
"And where did that information come from?"
"Sheriff Altman called me yesterday."
"Christmas Day?"
"Yes. My job is 365-24. I'm on call for dependent juveniles around the clock all year."
"And what did you learn in that call?"
"Objection," said D.B. Leiniger, rising to his feet. "Calls for hearsay."
"Sustained. Miss Cooper, please just tell us what you did as a result of that call." "Well, like I said, Sheriff Altman called me and gave me some information. As a result of that information, I paid an afternoon visit at the home of Ermeline Ransom of Orbit."
She nodded at Ermeline, who only returned a blank stare. Ermeline almost couldn't believe this was actually happening and felt like pinching herself. But she didn't. It was real. And it was a horror story, and she had nothing to hang on to except Thaddeus Murphy. She said a silent prayer for him and for Jamie.
"What happened there?"
I spoke with Mrs. Georgiana Armantrout at Ermeline's house. She was babysitting the minor. Evidently, the child's mother had been arrested for first-degree murder and removed from the home by the sheriff. The child was therefore dependent, as there is no father living in the home, and the father cannot be located from what I learned.
As a result, what did you do?
I determined that it would be in the child's best interests to leave him with the grandmother, Georgiana Armantrout, pending today's hearing. He is still with her this morning, as I didn't feel he was threatened in any way by being with her Christmas Day. However, it is my belief he should be removed from that home.
Removed, said Quentin Irwin, Jr. Why is it your opinion that he should be removed from the home?
Georgiana Armantrout is not a fit and proper party to have temporary custody of the minor. She has a criminal record involving violence.
Judge Prelate spoke up.
This court takes judicial notice of Miss Armantrout's record. This court took the plea in that case and accepted the plea bargain. It is noted that Miss Armantrout did indeed plead guilty to one count of involuntary manslaughter, which is, under our laws, a crime of violence. Thus, Miss Armantrout is unqualified as a person with whom placement of the minor might be made. Please continue.
Thaddeus shuffled his feet. He could see Ermeline in his peripheral vision. The color drained from her face as the court took judicial notice of the grandmother's plight. She pulled a tissue from the box and clutched it hard. Damned if they were going to see her tears, she decided.
Unbelievable,
she whispered, though Thaddeus responded by holding up his hand.
No talking, please,
he whispered back. Irwin continued.
Do you have an opinion regarding proper placement at this time?
Naomi Killen nodded.
The child's legal custody should be vested in the DCFS, and I will locate an appropriate foster home for him. This should happen immediately, so we can remove him from the home.
Ermeline gasped.
No, please,
she said weakly. Judge Prelate smiled down.
You'll get your chance, Ermeline. All right, Mr. Irwin. Anything further?
No, Your Honor.
Gentlemen?
D.B. Leininger shook his head, and Thaddeus said,
Not right now. Subject to recall, please? Then you may call your next witness, Mr. Irwin.
Your Honor, the state rests.
Gentlemen?
Said Judge Prelate, indicating the men on either side of Ermeline.
Witnesses, either of you?
I have one,
Thaddeus said.
Respondent Ermeline Ransom calls Christine Sussman as her first witness.
The bailiff went into the hallway, asked Christine to join them. Up until then, she hadn't been allowed in the courtroom, as all juvenile hearings and records are sealed. Christine stood before Clerk Smith and was sworn. She stepped up to the witness stand and took a seat. Thaddeus started in.
State your name.
Christine Sussman.
What is your occupation, for the record?
Everyone in the courtroom knew she worked for Thaddeus as his paralegal. Still, a record had to be made in case of an appeal by either side.
I am a paralegal. I work for Thaddeus Murphy in Orbit, Hickman County, Illinois.
Are you a mother?
I have two children, a boy and a girl.
Names and ages, please. She related their ages, that they were in perfect health and that they were normal, happy children.
You're married to Buddy Sussman.
I am, 10 years now.
What does Buddy do?
He worked for Victor Harrow of Harrow and Sons. Since Victor's death, we're not sure. So far, so good.
Meaning he still has his job?
Yes.
Are you and your husband able to provide proper support and care for your children?
We like to think so. We work hard and play with the kids every chance we get. Everyone gets along.
And prior to working as a paralegal for me, what other jobs have you held?
I left high school, turned 18, and enlisted in the Army. They sent me to basic training, then to military police school. Following that, I was sent to Iraq, where I served 2 tours.
Doing what?
Working as an MP.
Where?
Baghdad.
I see. What happened after those 2 tours?
The Army wanted me to re-up for another 4 years. So they offered me a school.
Did you re-up and go to school?
I did. I went to military justice school. They trained me as a paralegal.
Then what? Then I was stationed in Germany with a JAG unit. I was one of three paralegals for seven very busy prosecutors. What were your duties?
The usual. Witness statement review, deposition summaries, research and briefs, correspondence, filing, plus I ran the calendar for all seven, which was huge by itself.
Everybody got to where they needed to be on time. Thaddeus smiled.
They did, while I was there.
And why are you here today? Do you have any relationship to the minor child known as Jamie Ransom?
I do. My husband and Jamie's father, Hector, are second cousins, so that makes me a relative.
Objection, said District Attorney Irwin. She's offering a legal conclusion.
Oh, I think she can say she's a relative in a general way, said Judge Prelate. Overruled. You may continue.
As a relative, do you have an opinion regarding the appropriate temporary custody of Jamie Ransom?
I do, Christine said. He should be placed with me and Buddy.
Ermeline gasped, and Quentin Irwin Jr. rose up out of his chair.
Your Honor, while that's a nice offer and certainly good of Chris and Buddy, I don't think that legally she is of the correct degree of family to qualify her and Buddy for foster placement.
Judge Prelate nodded and sat back in his judge's chair. He looked up at the ceiling. He pressed his fingertips together and finally leaned forward.
Tell you what, Mr. Irwin, I'm going to ask you to brief the law on that issue. Give me a written brief by, oh, let's see, today's December 26. Can you have something to me by February 1?
Irwin said.
Really? You really want a brief?
Really, I do. Right now, the court is leaning in favor of the place of the child with Chris and Buddy Sussman. While the court isn't 100% positive on the degree of relationship required to create a priority for placement by family relationship, it is an issue worthy of no small amount of research. I think you're just the man for that job, Mr. Irwin.
Quentin Irwin Jr. took his seat. He couldn't help but smile. Judge Prelate pointed at the lawyers.
Anything further?
D.B. Leininger raised his hand. He had questions.
Miss Sussman, you say you've worked in Baghdad as an MP.
I did.
Isn't it true you were actually working with the CIA doing black ops?
Thaddeus was quickly on his feet.
Objection! Relevance, materiality?
Oh, it's relevant, said D.B. It goes to whether she has ever been engaged in violence of any nature herself. My suspicion is that she has been, knowing what went on in Baghdad at those prisons.
She may answer, said Judge Prelate, as long as the service isn't classified.
Christine looked up at the judge.
It is classified. I am under lifetime orders not to disclose my role in Iraq.
Your Honor, said D.B.
She's claiming to be a fit and proper person. Her history is very relevant.
But it is classified, Mr. Leininger, responded Thaddeus. You are swatting at gnats.
CIA agents in torture prisons aren't gnats, sir, I can assure you.
D.B. spat at Thaddeus.
I represent this little boy, and I just want to know what kind of people are going to be watching over him. That's my job to find out.
You're correct, Mr. Leininger, said Judge Prelate. But at this point, I'm afraid I'm going to have to draw the line and make a ruling. The court specifically finds that Miss Sussman's duty details while on active duty in Iraq are neither relevant nor material. Mr. Murphy's objection is sustained.
Very well, said D.B. Leininger. I have nothing further.
Anyone else?
Asked the judge. They all shook their heads.
Very well,
the judge began.
I have known Christine and Buddy Sussman since they were children themselves. When she got older, Christine babysat one summer with my own girls while Ginny was playing Golda in Fiddler on the Roof at the Hickman Players Theater. Christine did a great job. My girls loved her, and we thought the world of her. We were very happy with her, and I have nothing but the greatest respect for her ability to care for children. It is the order of the court that temporary placement of Jamie Ransom be with Christine and Buddy Sussman until further order of the court. Mr. Irwin, I will expect your brief by 5 p.m. on the 1st of February. Anything further?
All three attorneys shook their heads. Christine came down off the stand and stopped. She leaned across counsel table and gave Ermeline a hug.
Ermeline thanked her and patted her back. Thaddeus turned away and watched as Deputy Harshman watched the transaction between the two women, as he was required to do. Quentin Irwin Jr. walked up to Thaddeus, leaned close, and whispered,
"Don't that beat all. You're writing this bullcrap brief, Thaddeus. You owe me one."
Thaddeus smiled. Done. He breathed a huge sigh of relief. Catastrophe had been averted, at least for a while. But at any time, the state could renew the motion for the most minor reason and throw mother and son into uproar again. Thaddeus was determined not to let that happen.
"Later, good luck with her initial appearance."
"Thanks."